case of the day is Helix Infusion Therapy against HHI Infusion Services. Mr. Weiss.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. In three issues, Helix Infusion Therapy seeks reversal of the District Court's judgment based on the fact that it applied the incorrect legal standard for tortious interference with a contract under Texas law and also determined that HHI did not proximately cause Helix's damages in the case, which was a finding that was clearly erroneous. With respect to the first issue, Helix's trial brief set forth the proper legal standard for tortious interference in Texas by saying that it had to prove either HHI actually knew about the contract between Helix and Three Tree, or given the circumstances, that HHI should have known about it.
Well, right. You have the same problem as the counsel in another case. You essentially want us to make new credibility determinations. You recognize we can't do that, right?
I do recognize that, Your Honor.
And the district court was faced with several witnesses that gave competing testimony, like Keller, and found that some of those witnesses were more believable than Porter. And so do you have any other evidence besides Porter that supports your conclusion?
Yes, Your Honor. Actually, in our brief, and for purposes of appeal, we didn't rely on Chris Porter's testimony. Therefore, we didn't challenge the district court's determination. There was other evidence that we relied on, and I think it appeared on pages 27 through 33 in our brief, that said this is additional evidence, has nothing to do with Chris Porter.
But that same evidence was presented to the district court, and the court didn't find that persuasive, right?
Your Honor, the district court actually did not comment on that additional evidence. The additional evidence that we relied on in our brief said that, number one, Landon Lackey knew that Helix constructed in-office pharmacies for its clients. Lackey didn't deny that he was told that Three Tree was actually constructing an in-office pharmacy. There was Neil Stanton, who was one of the other officers of HHI. He actually testified at trial that HHI would know if one of their clients was previously had a contract with another infusion provider.
Let me go back for a second. You said in your trial brief, you did indicate, in essence, either actual knowledge or constructive knowledge would be sufficient.
Yes, Your Honor, on pages 2 and 3.
My question is, apart from the UCC argument, which, frankly, I don't think is going anywhere, but apart from that argument, where did you pull together and present to the district judge a coherent argument for how the evidence showed constructive knowledge?
Your Honor, it was raised, obviously, as you said, that it was raised in our trial brief what the standard was.
It was one sentence, simply kind of the background of the law. What I was looking for is the argument that is like that in your appellate brief that says, here's the circumstantial evidence that shows knowledge.
Yes, Your Honor. Throughout trial, when we had Landon Lackey on the stand, we asked him several times, you are aware of the fact that Helix actually constructs in-office pharmacies for its clients.
I understand you got the evidence. And in your trial brief, you have some evidence. In the trial brief, you have this passing reference. Where did you pull them together into an argument for the district judge to say, we really got them, here's the evidence of constructive knowledge?
Your Honor, it would have been through the testimony of the witnesses, but also if you look at our closing argument, we did actually reference those instances. And the court actually determined that these kind of contracts, these kind of services, are only provided in our industry through a contract. For instance, both parties entered into contracts with Three Tree. Lackey's trial testimony was that he was incentivized to bring in new contracts. That was on the trial transcript, page 111. HHI's senior vice president, Neil Stanton, actually testified at trial that the goal of meeting with prospects is to see if they can obtain a contract. That was on the trial transcript, page 236.
Yeah, they want a transcript of contract, right.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
HHI wants a contract, right?
Yes. But Neil Stanton also testified that they would know if one of their clients was previously in a contract with another infusion provider. The district court actually referenced in its ruling at the end of trial that HHI knows this is how Helix operates, that it operates through contracts. It was a given that these kind of contracts are industry standard. And because they're industry standard, Texas cases have specifically determined that industry standard is a means of a party showing that another party should have known about a contract. And the reason Texas cases have made that determination is simple. It's because it prevents willful blindness, the ostrich defense, putting blinders on, or whatever anyone wants to call it. It prevents parties from saying, we didn't actually know about the contract, therefore we can't be held liable. And that's exactly what happened in this instance.
You referred to your closing argument. Do you happen to have the text of that handy where you made that point? Or at least tell me where to find it.
On page, trial transcript, page 314, lines 17 through 25, we stated, Mr. Stanton was asked, would HHI know if a customer had previously had contracts with other companies, and he said no. He admitted that his deposition testimony went like this. Would HHI have any knowledge if some of the new contracts that they had obtained with physician practices, whether they were under contract with other infusion providers? Then on page 315, his answer, if somebody converts over from another provider, yeah, we would know that. There are additional references in our closing argument that reference Landon Lackey's knowledge that we actually build out or construct in-office pharmacies for our clients. For instance, on page 307 of the trial transcript, it references that there was a 5-year contract and then they were working towards building out an in-suite pharmacy. The important part to note is on trial transcript page 372, the district court actually said that HHI was aware that Helix was involved with Freetree. It's at the bottom of the page, and it says, I think the fact that HHI denies this, but the fact that they were aware that Helix was in the game doesn't bring Helix to home plate. So at that point, the district court recognized that, yes, HHI knew that Helix was somehow involved, but it didn't take into consideration our other evidence. It actually said, I think it was a few pages after that, that Porter had to have actually told Landon Lackey, quote, we have a contract. And then it said, if I can't rely on Chris Porter's testimony, then Helix can't sustain its burden in this case. What that does, it actually shows that the district court applied an actual knowledge standard, totally ignoring what they should have known. Additionally, and I just actually realized this the other day, there's a document that HHI filed in the case where they conceded that the district court only considered the actual knowledge standard. So if you look also at our second issue, which is the UCC financing statement, the district court on page 373 said that this would tell the world that Helix actually had a contract. What that does, that's showing that we have actual notes.
UCC filings are for the purpose of informing the world, members of the world population who also want a security interest in the same assets.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Not anybody else.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's going nowhere. Well, unless you've got evidence that Helix was trying to assert a security interest in the same assets. Any evidence of that?
Well, Your Honor, Helix was. That's why Helix filed the UCC financing statement.
I'm sorry, HHI. I meant your competitor.
Yes, because what we were trying to secure was the account receivables, and that is what HHI, with their contract, they're also trying to secure the account receivables.
Did they file their own UCC filing?
There was no evidence that they did that.
Or that they even looked?
We don't know if they looked or not.
Okay.
The district court, but it is important to note that the district court on page 374 of the trial transcript actually said, I don't think I can find that HHI had knowledge of the contract just by them being in the same business and looking at the UCC financing statement. This is important because finding of fact number 22 imposes the actual knowledge and the should have known standard. But when you compare that to the trial transcript, it's actually different. The trial transcript only imposed an actual knowledge test.
Why does the trial transcript matter? The judge made some off-the-cuff remarks at the end of the trial, and he then filed an opinion. It's the opinion that controls. They're the findings of fact and conclusions of law. We're going to file an opinion in this case, but you won't be able to go to the Supreme Court and say, well, you should disregard the actual opinion and pay attention to what the judges said at oral argument. The opinion is what matters.
I agree, Your Honor. It does.
But your brief seems to be focused, indeed fixated, on the judge's oral statements after the trial. Well, I can understand that in a way. They're less cautious than the opinion. But that's why judges write formal opinions, to make sure they've got things right.
That's correct, Your Honor. But under Rule 52, it says that a district court's opinion, you have to be able to tell what went on in the case. If you look at the district court's findings of fact and conclusions of law, it doesn't provide for meaningful review. It doesn't even state what our cause of action was. It doesn't reference Lane and Lackey's testimony. There are several issues that it just doesn't address. So what we did was we said, well, it doesn't address these. Therefore, because the Court of Appeals has the ability to take a look to see what happened at trial, we're going to go ahead and we will focus on what the court said at the end of trial, because that does provide for meaningful review.
Did you all sue 3Tree?
We didn't, and there was a reason we didn't do that. We didn't sue 3Tree because we felt they were essentially almost like a victim in this case.
Not exactly, but I assume that it's not good for business to sue your customers.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. On the question of proximate cause,
yes,
the judge said that he believed Keller. When he said, in essence, we weren't going to go forward anyway. We never even began construction of that in-house pharmacy, I think. Why isn't that the end of the story?
That's not the end of the story because in Texas, the law is they induce somebody to breach a contract, and it can be shown through better terms. In our reply brief, while the district court did say that he relied on Keller and his testimony that they wouldn't have gone forward with the contract anyway, in our reply brief, we actually cite Keller's testimony, and it does not say that. It says that he would have considered it at a later time. He didn't like the space. But also, at trial, Landon Lackey specifically said, when I asked him, does HHI provide better terms? He said, yes, their contract has better terms than ours does.
So you think that makes it clearly erroneous to find no proximate cause?
Well, I think it makes it clearly erroneous in conjunction with the fact that when you look at David Keller's testimony, he doesn't say that they wouldn't continue with the contract. I specifically asked him the question, and he said that they would continue with the contract, but this space wasn't right, and it was really expensive.
I thought he said we'd be willing to consider it sometime in the future. Did I misunderstand that?
He didn't
want to burn bridges with you guys. He might want to do business with you in the future. You don't want to burn bridges with him. But where they were, they simply didn't have the money or inclination to actually go forward with what they had promised to do.
Well, Your Honor, he did say that. But I can tell you that on page 15 of our reply brief, I said, why would you have considered it at a later time? And he said it would be contingent upon finding different space. He was basically explaining that the space wasn't right. This was a lot of money to spend on this space. He didn't say that they wouldn't continue it in the future. And, Your Honor, if I can make one more final point. With respect to the waiver argument that HHI actually raises, they have claimed that we waived the should have known argument. But if you look at their brief, and it's actually at the bottom of page 9 on their brief, they're not challenging the additional evidence that we raised, that we're saying that industry standard shows that contracts are used all the time, Neil Stanton's testimony. They're saying that we raised the should have known argument with respect to the conversation between Chris Porter and Landon Lackey, that there was nothing in there that should have noted to the court that they should have known based on that conversation. That's fine for an actual knowledge when we were trying to prove actual knowledge, but that was not an issue on appeal, and actually that was not an argument that we even raised at the district court level. We relied on additional evidence on pages 27 through 33 of our brief that HHI never addressed in their brief. And if the panel has no further questions, I'd like to reserve.
Your time has expired.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Weiss. Mr. Shoreline.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Paul Shoreline, and I represent the defendant, appellee in this case, HHI Infusion Services. Your Honor, I'm perplexed as to why we're here this morning. I'm sure that every party who obtains a verdict or judge...
this morning because you won and the other side lost.
Right. But
otherwise, you'd be sitting at that table, and Mr. Weiss would be sitting at this table.
That's true, Your Honor, but... You know, I think, you know, there are, when anybody gets a verdict or judgment in their favor, they believe, you know, in their hearts that the judgment is unassailable. Many times it is not. There are gray areas. Mistakes are made. Like those many parties before them who were victorious in the district court, as was HHI, when HHI received the judgment in its favor, it believed the district court's decision was unassailable and unappealable. And for good reason. That case was tried to the bench. The findings of fact were largely based on the facts stipulated by the parties prior to trial. The district court concluded that plaintiff failed to meet its burden of proof on two of the four elements of its cause of action for tortious interference with contract, and those conclusions were based on the district court's determination as to the credibility of three witnesses, or in the case of Chris Porter, plaintiff's star witness, the lack of credibility, a very distinct lack of credibility. Nothing said or written by plaintiff on appeal changes HHI's initial reaction to the judgment. This appeal should not have been brought. Neither HHI nor this honorable court should be forced to travel down the rabbit hole to plaintiff's alternative reality. It is unwarranted and the law does not permit it. Now, first of all, as to the improper statement of facts, which hasn't been addressed here this morning, I don't think I've seen a more argumentative statement of facts. Circuit Rule 28C requires that the statement of facts shall be a fair summary without argument or comment. However, plaintiff's statement of facts is filled with argument and comments, and I set them forth in our reply brief. And they were basically, alternatively, bolstering the non-credible testimony of their witness, Chris Porter, and incredibly disparaging the testimony of HHI's employee, Landon Lackey, who the district court said he found credible as to his inability to remember the conversation at the trade show. Throughout the statement of facts and the entire brief, for that matter, plaintiff, the losing party, treats contested testimony of its witness as facts, never once mentioning the district court's conclusion that Chris Porter's mannerisms disclose many of the classic indicia of untruthfulness and that his testimony was unreliable. That is a violation of the circuit rules, and
I think you will want to spend your remaining minutes, which are few, addressing the merits of this appeal and not the circuit rules, right? If we choose to strike Mr. Weiss's brief, we can do that, but that's not the ground on which you'll win or lose the appeal.
Yes, Your Honor. Plaintiff has asserted that the trial court did not apply the proper legal standard to the facts and therefore it is entitled to de novo review. This argument fails for several reasons. First of all, it requires the court to this honorable court to believe the testimony of Chris Porter as skewed by plaintiff, that Chris Porter gave Landon Lackey, HHI's employee, certain specific information from which Landon Lackey could actually know there was a contract between plaintiff and Three Tree, or from which Landon Lackey should have known there was such a contract. Given the court, the district court's credibility determination, which is unchallenged here, this is not possible. It also requires this honorable court to consider an argument that was never raised by plaintiff in the district court. Plaintiff's theory of the case was established early and reiterated often. For example, in the trial brief, they state, Landon Lackey learned about plaintiff's contract with Three Tree when Chris Porter disclosed that fact to him at a trade show. And then as an alternative to proving, and these are the statements in the trial brief, as an alternative to proving actual knowledge of the contract by HHI, under Texas law, the facts demonstrate that HHI should have concluded that a contract existed, but that should have known idea was based on the alternative being provided by plaintiff's filing of a UCC financing statement, which in the state of Washington should have put HHI on notice of the existence of the contract. That is their argument. That is their actual knowledge and should have known argument. There is nothing about Landon Lackey or Neil Stanton being able to infer that there might have been a contract and therefore they should have followed up. And they continued it in the opening statement. The evidence, this is plaintiff's opening statement at trial. The evidence will show that HHI had actual knowledge of plaintiff's contract by way of Chris Porter, and HHI had constructive knowledge of and notice of a contract by way of a UCC filing. And they reiterated that throughout the closing argument also. The main point in closing argument of Porter, that is the gist, that is the main point of Porter's testimony of this case. Porter told Lackey Three Tree had a contract with Helix. Then they go on to say that two or three more times in their closing argument. Plaintiff never argued in the district court that Lackey should have realized from his conversation with Porter that Three Tree had a contract with Helix, whether or not Porter specifically stated that there was a contract. And we argued that plaintiff waived the ability to make that specific argument for the first time on appeal. And we cite the FedNav International Limited case, a Seventh Circuit 2010 decision.
Mr. Shoreline, are you and Helix involved in other litigation around the country with other doctors?
There is no pending litigation that I'm aware of.
Okay.
As to proximate cause, Your Honor, I think it was clear based on the credible testimony of Dr. Keller that they could not have performed this contract under any circumstances. He testified that Three Tree could not obtain the financing to fund the necessary build-out. He cited the high capital expense and inability to pay a full-time staff. They could not get a guarantor for the lease, and there were too many code requirements to build out the space properly. And all of those reasons were set forth in the letter that was in evidence, Plaintiff's Exhibit 5, when Three Tree terminated the contract with Helix. And that is based on very clear Texas law set forth in the 47 Texas Jurisprudence Third Interference with Contract Section 11 cited in the Decker Oaks development case. If there are no questions from the court, I would rest on briefs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is taken under advisement.